Alors, je voudrais vous remercier d'abord pour votre extraordinaire discipline aujourd'hui, malgré le nombre d'intervenants et la longueur des interventions. On est parvenu à respecter l'horaire à la lettre, ce qui nous permet de nous réunir ici et d'entendre d'autres discours, mais debout, cette fois-ci, avec un verre de vin, ce qui rend la chose un peu plus agréable. On va essayer de s'en tenir à l'essentiel. Et l'essentiel, parce que il faut bien le dire, c'est en bonne partie le lancement de l'ouvrage de Madame Lajoie. Il faut répéter, je l'ai dit ce matin à ceux qui étaient là, que l'idée de ce symposium, de ce colloque, est venue de la volonté de marquer le lancement de l'ouvrage de Madame Lajoie. On imaginait 15-20 personnes dans une salle au deuxième étage, votre volonté d'être présent et notre désir de vous faire partager cet exercice de réflexion sur l'œuvre de Ronald McDonald a conduit à cet énorme colloque qui est probablement l'un des événements les plus importants, tant en nombre qu'en signification, que nous avons tenu à la faculté depuis ces dernières années. Je sais que plusieurs d'entre vous veulent une copie de l'ouvrage que vous avez apporté, donc le petit coupon pour faire acquisition de l'ouvrage. Vous aurez le loisir de lire l'ouvrage un peu plus tard, certainement. Il faut savoir que Mme Lajoie fait un travail de moine et fait des entrevues avec Rod et fait des entrevues avec des collègues de Rod, des anciens collègues et des collègues actuels de Rod, pour identifier l'héritage et la vie intellectuelle de Ronald McDonald. Le titre de l'ouvrage, donc, La vie intellectuelle de Roderick McDonald, Nœud papillon. Non, en fait, il y a un dessin de nœud papillon. Un engagement. Et vraiment, on a pu entendre ce soir à quel point la vie de Ronald McDonald, sa vie intellectuelle, est un engagement comme professeur, chercheur, activiste social. Et ce sont les aspects du livre de Madame Lajoie qui sont, je trouve, quant à moi, les plus intéressants. J'ai passé une partie de la journée à lire des petits bouts à mesure que la journée avançait. Alors, on a demandé à 4 collègues et anciens collègues de Rod d'intervenir, mais avant que ces gens-là ne prennent la parole très brièvement, je voudrais inviter une autre invitée d'honneur à venir prendre la parole pour souligner un autre aspect de la vie de Rod qui n'a pas beaucoup été mentionné aujourd'hui et qui est son énorme contribution à la vie universitaire, tant à l'intérieur de l'Université McGill que dans les instances universitaires comme la Société royale du Canada et d'autres instances très importantes que vous connaissez et auxquelles Rod a contribué de manière très, très significative au fil de sa carrière. Alors, la personne toute désignée pour faire cet exercice, c'est notre nouvelle principale, Mme Suzanne Fortier. Je suis très heureux de l'accueillir et j'invite à venir prendre la parole tout de suite.
Merci, Daniel, and good afternoon, welcome, and what a pleasure to see you all here assembled to pay tribute to a great thinker of the law, a great professor, a great man. It's just wonderful. Je suis vraiment triste de ne pas avoir participé à la journée au complet. J'ai eu un petit aperçu à la toute fin. Ça m'a vraiment démontré très clairement tout ce que j'avais manqué. Alors, si vous voulez recommencer un jour, là, moi, je suis partie prenante. Vous connaissez tous, je sais, la renommée du professeur McDonald. À titre de chercheur d'exception, d'éminent membre de la collectivité McGilloise, et vous connaissez son importante contribution, non seulement à McGill, mais aussi au Canada et auprès de maintes causes à l'échelle mondiale. C'est un remarquable collègue depuis plus de 30 ans. Il a exercé un rôle transformateur au sein de la faculté de droit et il a contribué à l'essor de McGill en tant que chef de file mondial en enseignement supérieur du droit. A dedicated teacher and member of the community, he guided numerous students towards careers in legal practice and has been a great inspiration to scholars and lay people at home and abroad. As you know, I think in 2012, the new reading room in the Walter House, which is the new house of the Royal Society of Canada, was named in his honor, and that it bears his name. And at the time, our Governor General, the Honorable David Johnson, was there. And in fact, David very much wanted to be here this evening. As you know, of course, he has a pretty demanding schedule. But he insisted and wanted to absolutely make sure that I would share with you a message to Rod. Dear Rod, I'm so sorry I cannot be with you today as I'm traveling. I would love to be part of the discussion and deciphering of your unbounded legal imagination. And I'm certain that try as they might, they will not reach the fence posts on the boundaries. Of course, fresh approaches, innovative proposals, refreshing appraisal of our traditions are simply what one expects from the holder of the Frank Scott Chair. But even Frank would be in awe of your contributions to the reform of the law, the enhancement of justice and improvements to the public good, and so are all of us. Yours ever, David Johnston. On behalf of the McGill community, I want to express our deep appreciation and our gratitude to you, Ron, for your leadership, your service, your profound influence on the life of the university, and we appreciate enormously all that you have done and continue to do. You may know, many of you may know, that in 2011, McGill awarded to Professor McDonald one of the very prestigious awards of this university, McGill's Lifetime Achievement Award for the leadership in leadership in learning. Now, we felt as a community that we needed to do more. And so at this, in the convocation this spring, McGill will award you the McGill University Medal for Exceptional Academic Achievements. And I want to congratulate you on this award. I have to tell you, maybe you don't know, but you will be the very first person to have received both awards. And I think it talks very, very clearly of the appreciation of this university and of your, all of your colleagues and students for you. Félicitations du fond du cœur. On est très heureux de pouvoir célébrer tout ce que vous avez fait, non seulement pour McGill, mais pour la communauté légale. Et on espère que vous serez avec nous encore longtemps. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Madame la Principale. J'invite maintenant Kim Brooks, the Dean of the Schulich School of Law at Dalhousie University, to say a few words.
Thanks, Danielle. What a joy to be here among friends. People get into my head. Sometimes it's deliberate. I conjure a refraction of the person, a refraction with sufficient definition for me to ask a question and listen for the response. Sometimes it's inadvertent. The person is pesky. He'll intrude on the edge of an idea. Either way, imagine Rod standing there in my head, staring with inquisitive gray-blue eyes, bow tie just noticeably askew, jacket with sleeves that are unquestionably too short because of his improbably long arms, and enormous hands gesticulating, fingers spread apart. This is what it has been like for me to come to know Rod a little. A mix of deliberate and inadvertent, sometimes welcome, sometimes unwelcome, intrusions into my brain. In a few minutes, let me offer some concrete illustrations of these mental interventions as a prism through which to view the relationship between scholarship and activism in Rod's work, which was my charge this afternoon. If you actually want to learn something about the relationship between scholarship and activism in Rod's work, read the book. Anything worth reading is not worth summarizing. Didn't you learn anything at McGill? I met Rod when I was a student in Vancouver. He was visiting there teaching two courses. His public lecture at UBC that year is not listed in his 76-page, apparently still incomplete, CV. But I think it ultimately became his UBC Law Review piece, Three Centuries of Constitution Making in Canada, Will There Be a Fourth? His talk followed closely behind Quebec's 1995 referendum. My recollection is that somewhere in the middle of the talk, Rod queried whether Quebec's sovereignty would ever be achieved, resolved, put to rest. Many challenge us to stop asking that question and to redefine the territory from which we observed constitutional practices, that instead of being preoccupied about when the question of Quebec's sovereignty might finally be resolved, we should simply accept Quebec's sovereignty as a conundrum that provides the terrain from which we should explore other constitutional dilemmas. To be clear, I have no idea what Rod actually said in that talk, or even if he said anything that approximates what I just said, he said. But what I learned from that talk in the first year I was exposed to Rod's unbounded mind was that sometimes when a puzzle seems frustrating, so much so that I get impatient and wish it were over, the best move is to embrace the puzzle as your geography, as the space you live within, not the question you answer. Take, for example, the intractable problems of inequality. Sometimes, as someone who cares about material distribution, I think I can't possibly attend one more conference or workshop or session where someone is railing against inequality. I wish we would just make the world equal, or if not, just declare it to be so and get on with other things, even for a day, just so I could stop thinking about it. And then I conjure up Rod standing there looking small for once, in contrast to the oversized lecture hall in the now demolished UBC Law Building, a lecture hall with no windows, abysmal acoustics, and an enormous set of mounted speakers that dangled only half attached to the concrete bunker walls where we were that were never working. And on the days I am plagued by the complex questions of the world, I think, how can I build a lighthouse on this painful, rocky ground, climb the stairs, and stare out from a new place with the aid of a beam? Equality and distributive justice are the questions we live, not the questions we answer. And I'm liberated from my own frustrations and impatience. When I arrived at McGill in summer 2007, my interactions with Rod became more frequent. Our office homes were separated by a short series of stairs and three doors. In Rod, I met a colleague with an unprecedented curiosity and appetite for engagement. Try something out if you haven't. Send Rod a paper. Unlike the rest of you, Rod will read it. Often within a couple of days. He will be the first person to get back to you. His email will apologize for his delay in responding. A trail of his reflections track down the margins of your work. How glorious that word created the comment function. I must confess that sometimes I think about just cutting out those reflections, putting them into a paper, and then submitting those in lieu of my paper, because they are inevitably better. In a recent exchange, Rod writes in a little bubble on the side of my inconsequential musings, "We should question everything, ask what if about everything, respond to what seem like wild ideas from students and outsiders." Perhaps not oddly, this is what Rod says when he comes into my head uninvited. He forces himself upon me, leaning in with those enormous hands waving, demanding, "Is this the question to be asking? What other questions might you have asked? What questions are you avoiding? What answers have you assumed? Why do you care about the answer anyway?" Activism is, I think, most fundamentally about the project of being motivated to engage in the world. Rod's scholarship and activism live symbiotically. Rod has performed scholarship in all manner of forms, cases and materials, essays, monographs, translations, government reports, research studies, chapters, editorial projects, case comments, songs, journal articles, unpublished musings, conference agendas, research grant applications, book reviews, review articles, pamphlets, newspaper and magazine articles, columns, annotations, headnotes, legislation, research proposals, faculty reports, parliamentary briefs, emails, and conversations. No matter the form, his scholarship brings him into our heads and changes the way we think and act in the world. Ultimately, when you read Rod, in my experience, you will be left with him gesticulating wildly with those goddamn long arms in your head. This, it seems to me, is scholarship intersecting activism. Thank you.
Kim demonstrated once more that she doesn't breathe like a normal person. I don't know how she does it. I've seen her do that so often. I now invite my former dean of this faculty, now Justice of the Court of Appeal of Quebec, Nicolas Cassiro, to say a few words.
Merci, cher Daniel. Alors, dans les un des thèmes évoqués par André Lajoie dans sa superbe Ode à Rod, est la contribution du professeur MacDonald à la vie institutionnelle du droit. Il y a lieu, certes, de saluer cet apport à diverses facettes de la vie publique, mais je m'attarderai un peu comme la principale, quelques instants, sur comment l'université est marquée par Rod MacDonald et les universités, York, Ottawa, Toronto, il a fait ses études, Windsor, on l'a mentionné tantôt, il a commencé son enseignement, plusieurs facultés de droit au Canada et ailleurs où il a placé ses étudiants comme professeur, des douzaines d'universités où il a professé comme invité depuis bientôt 40 ans. Vous m'excuserez si je m'arrête particulièrement à la nôtre, cette faculté de droit à l'Université McGill, où il enseigne depuis 1979, cette faculté qui a envers Rod MacDonald une immense dette d'honneur. This faculty, like all universities, is gloriously free, a gloriously free and infinite space. And like all universities, it is shaped by human strength and frailty. As a social space, it is occasionally messy, pretty much ungovernable, and if only because its student body is in constant flux, it suffers from amnesia. Historians of the faculty have found it easier to write in the register of anecdote, the antics of the class of 22, the strike of 71, and with some good success, hagiography, inventing the occasional luminary to light up one era or another of the faculty's past. A good historian of the faculty would be quick to say that in a university, especially an ancient one like McGill, it is unlikely that a single person can bring about change, and less likely still that a single moment in an academic career could serve as an epiphany or a point de bascule for the intellectual life of a unit. Well, I'm no historian. I think there was a moment that changed the faculty forever. It was the summer of 1981. Rod MacDonald became Associate Dean Academic of the Faculty of Law, appointed by a great dean to take charge of teaching and learning in this building. It was a surprising and visionary appointment. Bringing Rod MacDonald to McGill and putting him in a position of influence were among the crowning achievements of John Brierley's career at McGill. When Rod arrived to teach administrative law, civil law security on property, common law wills in 1979, and jurisprudence, he was already stripped for more climbing. Wildly imaginative, no unearned claims to his loyalty, ready to sing, matched with Shelley, engaged, free. The work of rethinking McGill began in earnest as he matched courses to teachers in 1981. The project was simple: make law teaching a university pursuit at McGill. The faculty had somewhat complacently told itself that it had been an early home to full-time law teaching, to Walton and Lee and Scott and Corbett and others. This is not true. The prise de la Bastille came with Rod's associate deanship and the extraordinary pyrotechnical deanship that followed. A deanship that seems so inevitable today, it was not inevitable. An appointment that was the crowning achievement of that principal of the day, and I'm including among his list of achievements his own appointment to Rideau Hall. Rod would be quick to say that he had help, that he had setbacks, but the fact remains that he changed forever recruitment of students from inside and out. He had a hand in reinventing nearly every course in the faculty. He established almost single-handedly the research-intensive ethic that has defined the faculty ever since. Every sentient candidate for a professorial appointment understood sooner or later that this place tracked Rod's aspiration for the university, for all universities, as a place to be free and engaged at once. And he wrote, during the associate deanship and the deanship of the 1980s, came the most imaginative work on the civil law and administrative process published in Quebec in 25 years. We read in awe pour une reconnaissance d'une normativité implicite et inférentielle. During that deanship, the first drafts of legal bilingualism, custom-made, vieille garde, office politics, and more. Some works have been lost in the shuffle, the entry on the civil code in the Canadian Encyclopedia. Read the preface to a little book called Le droit dans tous ses états, published at UQAM in this period. With all that superbly scholarly noise, this was an endlessly exciting place to be. From the time of that associate deanship, the faculty was just never the same. Studying law at McGill became more plainly, in a thousand ways, in a thousand settings, a quest for virtue, an inquiry into how human beings organize knowledge, a study of the forms and limits of the institutions of public life. In Rod's law faculty, there is no room for smugness or self-satisfaction. Students, teachers, and administrators are too busy looking inwards and outwards at once, engaging with difference, acquiring practical wisdom, holding the implicit up for scrutiny. As successive principals and provosts at McGill have learned from 1981 on, and thanks to Rod, this Faculty of Law is a special site for inquiring what is a university, why universities must be anti-instrumental, that learning must be self-reflective. If studying law is a way to be alive, as Rod has often said, then the Faculty of Law has been a grand place to be alive. The faculty now provides a way of knowing the world marked by this fine person and has changed the lives of thousands of people like me. Thank you.
Merci, Nicolas. Je cède maintenant la parole à ma collègue Rosalie Joker, qui va aussi nous dire quelques mots sur Rod.
If it's not impossible, it's not worth doing. I have chosen these words as the title of my remarks tonight for two reasons. The first is that this is a direct quote from Rod MacDonald, one he used when he spoke at Harvard Law School and presented our transsystemic law program to its faculty. But tonight, I use this expression because it exemplifies Rod himself. It speaks to his whole life and career, by any standards, one that is impossible to most, but to Rod, one that in its sheer and audacious impossibility is the only one worth doing. The second reason is that many would think it an impossible task even to attempt to capture all of Rod's multifaceted career in a single book. And yet that is what André Lajoie has done. Congratulations, André, for giving us this important book on the life and work of Rod MacDonald. Thank you for attempting the impossible by capturing the man himself, the beliefs that forged the path of his life, and the extensive contribution he has made via his scholarship, teaching, mentorship, and public service. Quite impossible, but definitely worth it. Tenant compte de la portée très large des travaux de recherche de Rod, la professeure Lajoie a dû faire des choix difficiles, se concentrant sur les contributions qu'elle estime les plus originales et sur celles qui ont changé le paradigme actuel. Pour ma part, ce soir, je voudrais souligner les contributions académiques qui sont mises moins de l'avant dans le livre, notamment les travaux de Rod qui concernent l'enseignement et la théorie de la pédagogie juridique. Now, don't get me wrong. André Lajoie's book certainly captures Rod's influence as a pedagogue and mentor to his students and his colleagues, many of those colleagues being former students, and I count myself as one of the lucky ones in this category. With an entire chapter in the book entitled Avant tout professeur, Professor Lajoie highlights Rod's vision of teaching as an agent for social change, recognizes the challenging and creative methods that shaped his pedagogy, and captures his belief that we don't teach stuff, we teach who we are. And of course, she identifies his important contribution to legal education at McGill through the curricular reform that he advanced in his decanal capacity. But I would like to focus on Rod's influence on legal education and pedagogy in his scholarship, the influence of which surpasses both the curriculum at McGill and the students and colleagues with whom he interacted directly. L'enseignement juridique comme sujet de recherche n'est pas quelque chose que Rod a entrepris seulement après des décennies d'expérience comme professeur. En fait, Rod a commencé sa carrière universitaire avec un intérêt académique pour la pédagogie juridique et nous trouvons, dès ses premières publications dans les années 70, des articles sur ce sujet. En plus, ces trois articles les plus récents, dont deux sont encore à paraître, traitent justement de pédagogie juridique. So obviously this topic has been a lifelong academic as well as personal interest of his. And although he has refined and developed his views on the subject, he hasn't really changed his mind about much. Many of the seeds of his important contributions can be found in one of his earliest publications, an article he wrote in 1979 entitled, futuristically, Legal Education on the Threshold of the 1980s. So what exactly has Rod's scholarship taught us? Well, what follows is my understanding of some of his teaching. He taught us that we view legal education too narrowly if we think it occurs only in the classroom, dispensed only by law professors. He emphasized that it occurs both inside and outside the faculty, formally and informally, in a variety of sites and through a variety of media, and that we should rejoice in the implicit, the inferential, the tacit, the underground. He taught us to challenge the traditional dichotomy of legal education, what he termed the perennial chestnut of practical as opposed to theoretical education, explaining rather poetically that abstract theoretical knowledge is simply the canvas on which students of law learn to paint. He maintained throughout his academic writing that legal education can and should prepare our students for a multitude of careers, and that the goal is not to stigmatize certain career choices, but rather to value them all and confront every student with the challenges and responsibilities attendant upon the ethical deployment of legal knowledge in any type of practice. Il a mis l'accent sur l'importance de concevoir la faculté de droit comme une communauté intellectuelle, une communauté d'apprenants, où les professeurs apprennent autant de leurs étudiants que les étudiants apprennent de leurs professeurs. And he challenged all the isms, instrumentalism, pragmatism, formalism, and professionalism of legal education, long before this was popular, and in that, taught us the importance of being provocative, a trait that comes quite easily to Rod. After all, who else would have had the guts to write in a journal article in 1979, at the beginning of his academic career, that he wasn't quite sure that teaching the law of contracts was preferable to teaching the law of bumblebees? Il a insisté sur l'importance de l'interdisciplinarité dans la salle de classe, identifiant très tôt dans sa carrière que les cours de droit avaient aussi une signification non juridique et que leurs frontières étaient définies par des facteurs extra-juridiques. Il nous a appris que le droit n'est qu'une lentille à travers laquelle nous pouvons analyser les problèmes humains et proposer des solutions. But most importantly, he taught us what legal education should really be about. Inspired, as we heard several times today, by Fuller, who saw law as a human project, a human accomplishment, and a human aspiration that emerges from ongoing patterns of human interaction, Rod conceived legal education as being, at its core, learning how to attend to the complexities of human beings in interaction with each other, stating that we should teach how law could be a facilitator of human interaction and about finding social outcomes that help solve human problems, not perfecting abstract concepts to solve legal puzzles. He stressed that teaching law is not about teaching the law, but rather focusing on the goals we seek to achieve through law, and that the pedagogical propeller of a course had to be its commitment to questioning orthodoxy's privileged place in the creation and perpetuation of legal knowledge. Ultimately, he taught us that legal education is about self-discovery, And that the who we are and who we become, is more important than the what we teach or what we learn. Despite being incredibly critical, even at times mocking, of traditional conceptions and practices of legal education, he managed to inculcate in us a sense of optimism. Instead of leading us down the path of cynicism, he told us that not only are we fortunate to be law teachers, but that teaching law is actually a way of being alive. Rod's concept of legal education and pedagogy evolved ultimately into his concept of the virtuous life. As there is a whole panel on pursuing virtue tomorrow afternoon, I will say very little on this subject, except that he recently summed it up as, quote, a morality of duty and responsibility in our relationships towards others, and a morality of aspiration and virtue in our expectations of ourselves. To many, this may sound impossible, but as Rod has taught us, if it's not impossible, it's not worth doing.
Merci, Rosalie. J'invite maintenant un dernier intervenant, mon ancien doyen, ancien professeur ici à la Faculté de droit de l'Université McGill, maintenant juge de la Cour d'appel du Québec, Yves-Marie Morissette.
I'm the last person to speak at the end of a long day, so it would be most impolite of me to be prolix. I reassure you I'm going to be brief. I'll try to be pithy. I may not be as successful as Rod in being pithy. I'll focus on two short points. First, the impact of the McDonald deanship on the Faculty of Law. Second, McDonald's concept of access to justice, a topic which is dealt with at length in Madame Lajoie's book. First point, following up on what my colleague Nicholas Cassiris said, I would add this. I would say that being the dean at McGill Law School after Rod McDonald was immeasurably easier than being dean at McGill Law School before Rod McDonald. And the reason for this is simple. In 5 years, this has been said already, he transformed the place, not only academically, that's obvious, but also in several other subtle and profound ways. Now, here's an example. The faculty during that deanship became what I would describe as a small, thriving political community, where students now had much more to say in the general unfolding of things, and where consequently they also had more responsibilities, which McDonald will tell you is in itself a rich educational opportunity. Now that's McDonald. Typical of his thinking. Reality is all of a piece, and there's no upstairs and there's no downstairs. Second, and here I return to Professor Lajoie's book, essay, throughout his career, Rod had a keen interest in access to justice, a fact which is well documented in the book. And in reality, if you look at the truly overwhelming publication list, there are no fewer than 24 titles, monographs, articles, government reports that deal with this topic. But that's not the point I want to make. My point is more specific. Two pieces in this list are especially noteworthy. The first is his Theory of Procedural Fairness, published in the Windsor Yearbook of Access to Justice in 1981. The second is his contribution, Access to Justice, published in 2010 in the Oxford Handbook of Empirical Legal Research. These texts are like bookends. The first, which appeared not long after Rod had come to McGill, and which is an essay in pure jurisprudence, astonished me at the time. It posits an all-encompassing and powerfully original theory of fairness, very broadly understood or conceived, fairness as a crucial component of justice. It was so new and so unlike the stuff we heard about access to justice. The second text first asserts that any normatively defensible account of justice must take seriously the conceptions of justice that citizens themselves hold, and must therefore push reflection well beyond concern for official dispute resolution processes and institutions. It then presents as critical and as exhaustive a survey on empirical research about access to justice as one can hope to read. MacDonald had a way of engaging discussion, which has a way of engaging discussion, which consistently shifts the paradigm. Now, this is a cliche. I couldn't think of a better expression, but there it is. He and I taught administrative law side by side for many years. When he was done with rethinking that field, administrative process and judicial review replaced administrative law, serving as a much broader window on administrative justice and the law's instinctive and irrepressible penchant for limitless self-absorption had been successfully resisted and neutralized in this part of the curriculum. He did this. The remarkable thing is that he does this with equal ease at both ends of things, the jurisprudential end and the empirical end. Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote somewhere, "I hate facts." And according to one biographer, he was fond of saying to a colleague of his, "Brandeis, don't confuse me with facts." Mastering theory and paying constant attention to facts, to the reality of the matter, and the characteristics, are the characteristics of MacDonald's one and only kind of scholarship, and in particular his work on access to justice. It's a gift to all of us, and there is only one way to describe it. It's remarkable, and it comes from an extraordinary man I was extremely lucky to know well as a colleague and as a friend. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Yves-Marie. So now's the time to refill your glasses, be merry, enjoy one another. We've actually structured the day so that you couldn't have much of a chance to talk to one another, even though you're dying to talk to one another, as this is a great network. So stay. There is a little surprise coming in about 15 minutes. Don't go away.
Gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, you know that Rod MacDonald's musical contributions have been of significance over time, but I don't want you to have the impression that he was the only source of musical talent at McGill. We have a lot of hidden talent here, and some of our most significant talent is about to make its way to the stage. So I would welcome our little surprise to come forward now, and we have a little musical number to offer.
OK, alors on va pas vous empêcher de boire. Vous pouvez continuer à boire et à manger. It would be better that way. We're going to do, so just maybe twist this a little. Do you want to test yours? This is good. So we're going to do three songs, and we've timed ourselves to 15 minutes. So if you can bear 15 minutes, we should be all right.
They can leave.
First song, I think, has a little history behind it. So 15 years ago, Rod was leaving for the Law Commission, and Richard Yanda organized an event, as he always does. Organize an event, in this case, at his home in Westmount, at which he invited all of the people who'd been recruited by Rod over the years. And on that occasion, we put together a little song, which is a modified version of a well-known Springsteen number, and it's called Thunder Rod. So, Marty, you're on. Do you want to test mics?
One, two, that's good.
I think we're good.
So you start on the harmonica.
One, two,
three, four. His office door slams. Hinges give way. Lack of vision.
he runs down the stairs and screams bad day today. Stupid keyboard chokes on my prose. Come on, Libby, faites quelque chose. The printer's heating up, it just can't keep up with me again. He runs back inside and writes a piece before noon. From Hepathec to Ron Corelli, there's nothing he ain't done anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. No toilets and bark is alright. Count on another piece by tonight. You can hide beneath the covers, nor speaks up in vain. The scholar among scholars, a shelter in the rain. Spent a lifetime fixing the flaws of the laws that apply to these streets. Oh, he's our hero, and that's understood. His teaching is redemption, the best in the neighborhood. Grab a chance to listen in somehow, cause who knows what he'll do now. Except light up your mind and let the truth blow back your fear. He'll just ask a few questions to make a puzzle of all that you hold dear. Give you one last chance to get a feel for the insight one man can distill. Complete Fuller and May sweatshoes. Oh, oh, he takes a stand. He's riding out tonight to case the promised land. Oh, 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 thunder rod, oh, thunder rod, thunder rod. Working out there in one more commission. Never too late to begin a new mission. Oh, 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 oh. Thunderrod, kick doors, be on Thunderrod. Well, we have this mentor and he knows how to make us talk. We're McDonald's packing, we're ready to take that long walk. From the blank page to scholarship, the door is open, but the ride it ain't. I know you're hungry for the words that ain't written, but as Rod will soon tell you, nothing's a given. There are stars in the eyes of all the ones he brought this way. We need room, his shelf space, and his skeleton frames of books and great essays. We teach in every class and committee, and when the time comes, he gives us the key. In the lonely cool fall dawn, you hear our keyboards clicking on, knowing deep in our hearts Rod keeps us going on. So won't you join in, cause to fight for the losers is the only way to win.
We're all sweating. So, the second one is really a gift to you. I know that this is one of your favorite songs. You've done it in many places and on many occasions. We're going to do our best to present it as well as you do. So the song is called There But For Fortune. It's a Phil Ochs song. I think that's a favorite of Rod's.
Thank you.
prison. Show me a jail. Show me a prisoner whose face has gone pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. Show me an alley, show me a train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain, and I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. Stains on the floor. Show me the drunken man who stumbles out the door. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why.
First of all, I'd like to say that I was very honored to be asked to make a small contribution to this event. I was very relieved that I did not have to give an academic paper, so it's very good that way. And this is a tune that I wrote years ago, and Rod has sung it, so it's another connection that we have together. And I encourage you to sing the chorus. It's always nice to have a sing-along, and it's very easy. And in the spirit of legal and musical pluralism, you can sing in any key you want.
I've got the men's ring for love. I've got the mens rea for love. Lord, I said all my prayers, I just can't get the actus reus. I've got the mens rea for love. I met her at the Ontario Reports. We were looking for the same case on torts. She smiled at me, I smiled at her. I figured recipes a loquitur. I've got the mens rea for love. We talked about the common law. She said Lord Denning had a major flaw. Oh, judge shouldn't be a legislator. I said, can we discuss this later? See, I've got the mens rea for love. I've got
the mens rea for love.
I don't hear you.
I've got mens rea for love. Lord, I've said all my prayers, I just can't get the actor's phrase. I've got the mens rea for love.
All of you, play a little bit.
Saw her at the Weekly Notes, researching Admiralty. I guess she was into boats. I said, "You look like an expert on bottom reef." Her look said, "No, Lee Prosequi. I've got the mens rea for love. I've got the mens rea for love. I've got the mens rea for love. Lord, I said all my prayers, just can't get the actor's race. I've got the mens rea for love. Starry Decisis given me a raw deal. With every girl I can't get leave to appeal. I'm looking for that eternal bliss. All I get are motions to dismiss. I've got the mens rea for love.
Okay, let's do it a couple more times.
I've got the mens rea for love. I've got the mens rea for love. Lord, said all my prayers, cannot get the actor's race. I've got the mens rea for love.
Let's do it one more time.
I've got the mens rea for love. I've got the mens rea for love. Lord, I said all my prayers, I just can't get the actor's race. I've got the mens rea for love. I've got the mens rea for love.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was my colleague, former colleague, Marty Boodman. You may know the Dean, Daniel Jutras, and Olivier Jardin. Thank you to all of you.